Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
This is CBS and the World. I'm John Batchelor. China and the United States, in dialogue, not so much. Several weeks ago, we were told that Beijing welcomed a visit by the Secretary of the Treasury, Janet Yellen, welcomed a visit by the Secretary of Commerce, former Governor Raimondo of Rhode Island, but did not welcome Antony Blinken, the Secretary of State. Now we're told that Antony Blinken is welcomed in Beijing in the coming weeks. So the puzzle is, what's changed, if anything? And we welcome Steve Yates. He is the chair of the America First Policy Institute's China Policy Initiative. Steve, I know it's June and no longer May, but that doesn't sound profound enough. What changed in Beijing that they're now willing to speak with Mr. Blinken? Good evening to you.
Oh, good evening, John. Yeah, certainly for a time, Beijing was trying to leverage access to and the interests of the economic team in the Biden administration, who seemed to be the front end of the effort on behalf of the president to push this idea of a thaw, going back from a period of what they would consider to be unprecedented tensions. So it was a little bit of a change to open up to someone like Secretary Blinken. State Department actually is one of the instruments for imposing sanctions on different officials. And that was one of the core issues with regard to the named individuals, including officials that were sanctioned from the Chinese government. Whereas we had in recent weeks this not fully defined visit by mid-level officials to Beijing on the anniversary of June 4th. We have the president calling the balloon intrusion silly. And we had some other kind of statements that seemed to be tipping the balance back toward traditional engagement. So perhaps it's moves by the Biden administration that have checked Beijing's boxes to allow for a meeting to proceed. But to what end is very unclear.
Gordon, you have a question for Steve.
Steve, I think that Beijing will view Blinken's visit to Beijing as capitulation to a greater China by the United States. In other words, the United States acknowledging its submission to China. What do you think?
Well, it certainly does put the United States in the position that we would call an ardent suitor. We seem to want this relationship and these meetings more than Beijing does. Beijing seems perfectly comfortable to sit back and wait for Americans to get their policy right, in air quotes, according to Beijing's point of view. So if the American officials will say the right words and pull back from the policies and assertions that Beijing dislikes, then they will grant a meeting. Now, all of us know from decades of experience that meetings are not an end of themselves. They're supposed to be a means to an end. And all America keeps pushing is for the holding of these meetings and channels of communication. It does project weakness. And it's happening at a time when Beijing is challenging naval vessels and air vessels, and not just those of the United States around Taiwan and the South China Sea.
The visit by the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, Mr. Burns, we're told now happened last month. Is that significant in making the path for Mr. Blinken? Are they connected events? There are separate silos in Washington. Are they both now connected?
They're separate silos, but in the history of U.S.-China relations, those intelligence channels have been used, especially at the time of exploring and then establishing normal diplomatic relations with the People's Republic of China. And in times of crisis, it's often been the channel that has been used to try to fly below the radar to impress upon leadership in Beijing or other problem countries that there is a genuine offer by the leader of the United States to try to engage in a policy. policy dialogue. So that's kind of the channel you would use if you are trying to test this thaw and pave the way for those meetings. I strongly suspect that there was an element of trying to talk Russia, Ukraine, but then there'd be a big element of talking North Korea, but then pulling back from some of these threatened sanctions that have to do with areas of decoupling versus what the administration calls de-risking U.S.-China relations.
Gordon, Steve mentions Ukraine. Your measure, Gordon, one version I've heard of these conversations is that the U.S. is looking for China to, in some fashion, broker a ceasefire in Ukraine. And for that, China will get, fill in the blank, what we're trading. Is that too raw and romantic, Gordon, for what's going on, a straight-up trade?
I don't know, John. I wouldn't put it past the Biden administration to propose such a deal, which would not be in the interest of Ukraine, would not be in the interest of the United States, certainly would not be in the interest of the international community. In the beginning, the Biden team was against ceasefire talks, and that was the right approach, considering the grave situation the world faces. But who knows? We've seen a collapse in the Biden policy, so I can't put anything beyond these guys.
Steve, do you have thoughts about this trade? The fact that I read about it means that it might just be a construction out of a think tank. But I respect think tanks, and they tend to know what they're doing. What do you think of the U.S. asking for China's help if we give them and then fill in the blank?
Well, it is a very traditional establishment engagement, pick your adjective, approach to dealing with China. And it happens often from Western powers to propose these kinds of trades. And the Communist Party has become expert in taking what is given without really giving what was asked of them in the trade. And so it would be a foolhardy errand to think that there is some kind of strategic trade-off to get. If you offer China some concessions, say, on Taiwan or sanctions or decoupling or whatever the issue might be in the U.S.-China agenda, in exchange for them pressing Russia, there's also no evidence that China will or can press Russia to take a different approach to the Ukraine or otherwise, even if they wanted to. And I would wager that Xi Jinping doesn't want them to take a different approach.
Gordon, you have a question.
Steve, it's a basic principle of U.S. diplomacy that we must maintain lines of communications, even to countries that we find whatever. It sounds like it should work, but what we have seen over the course of five decades and certainly over the course of the last 3 years is that it's created this disastrous situation. And yet Washington continues to pursue a policy that is obviously not working. So what's wrong in D.C.?
Well, I've certainly lived through this conundrum that you have described. It doesn't make sense to people like you and me. And there's tons of evidence that pursuing these channels of communication, that just proves the point that having a channel of communication is far less important than what the content of that communication is meant to be, and whether the people on the receiving end are prepared to understand or believe what you are trying to convey. And so in many instances, going back to the EP3 that I lived through at the beginning of the Bush administration to the current era, there are often times when Beijing wouldn't even pick up the phone or take a meeting. And then there were others where we had top level people go in to talk about North Korea or otherwise, and Beijing would listen, but wouldn't do very much. I think there's a sad pattern of people actually considering the meetings an end of themselves. And that if we have these meetings, that somehow that will keep the worst of developments from breaking out, you would think that this similar kind of thinking about Russia and Ukraine would have popped that balloon in geostrategic terms. And it certainly should be popped with regard to China and its neighbors.
Stephen Yates is chair of the America First Policy Institute's China Policy Initiative. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, Gatestone Newsweek and The Hill. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Valspar Ultra starts at just $29.98 a gallon. So we've got you covered when your daughter wants to paint her room again after last year's masterpiece of a unicorn mural.
Dad, please.
Or when you realize that maybe you went too hard on the grayish.
I miss color.
or when you were sure you wanted a home gym, but your elliptical is currently hanging your laundry.
What about a home office?
Shop everything you need for your next phase with Valspar. Available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.